listening to the San Jose Sharks Morning Tide, brought to you by Coors Light.
Logan Couture wins it in overtime.
Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
First play on the left wing side, Blue Jackets in. It's Hurdle, Eklund throwing it back to the point. Pouliot back in front. Eklund, backhand shot. He scores! First National Hockey League goal for William Eklund on a hard backhand shot after some great work. And that puts the Sharks back in the game. 9:36 to go in the second period. William Eklund gets number one. The score is the Blue Jackets 3 and the Sharks 2.
Yeah, you know, it's special. Of course, it's something all kids dream of. You know, scoring your first goal in the NHL, and you know, been waiting long for this and had a lot of chances. So it was nice to finally get this one, and now you know, keep on going from here.
All right, good morning, everyone. How are we doing? Last night was a perfect example of the Sharks having all the effort in the world to get themselves back into that game. They were down 3-1. The momentum had completely shifted, but they worked their way back into it. They sent it to overtime. They made it a game. But as I have consistently talked about on the other side of the deadline, it takes more than effort. It takes a high level of gameplay. And quite simply, the Sharks didn't have enough of that throughout the course of the game, specifically on the defensive end, and that's why they ended up overtime losers. Now, while chants of "we want Connor" or "we want Bedard" echoed through the building, I don't pretend to be unaware of what last night meant beyond the Sharks being officially eliminated from playoff contention. It means that their chances of landing the number one overall pick for Connor Bedard have never been better, even if nothing is guaranteed. And that's what you can hope comes out of a season like this, right? I mean, you talk about all the frustration that's been throughout the course of this year. You talk about the missed opportunity, the missed chances, the lack of overall positivity, only having 6 home wins. I was talking with Aaron Portsline yesterday on the build-up, and we're going to get into some of that interview a little bit later here on Morning Tide. And he was talking about the fact that he has a hard time just getting his arms around the idea that the Sharks are only a 6-win at home team. He talked about how it used to be the almost could not win at SAP Center. And that's exactly what you're trying to get back to. And maybe you saw some glimpses of the future last night. Maybe that, you know, goes beyond the attempts to land that number one overall pick and the potential to land a Connor Bedard. But you saw William Eklund score his first ever National Hockey League goal. That is a big moment, and you've been waiting for him to have that breakthrough. And yes, he has not played in very many games. I am not trying to say that I was concerned or anything. It was just like, you wanted it to happen, because I think that William Eklund, once he does, you know, now get a chance to get on a bit of a roll, I think it is most definitely a possibility. And I think that when you watch him out on the ice, like, this is the thing I notice about William Eklund, is that he is very good at seeing the play and or predicting the play in the process, to the extent that he's almost seen it before it's happening. If you watch him read that play and the way he is reacting and positioning himself to be there for a rebound or for a chance to make something happen, he sees it before it's happening, or at least he's reacting so fast to what he's seen that it seems like it's ahead of the play. I mean, that type of a skill, that type of vision is something you cannot put a price on. And I think that once he does figure out the other aspects of his game, he is going to be a playmaking machine. Whether or not it is the goal scoring machine, I mean, listen, that's great if he ends up being a goal scoring machine, but I just look at his overall playmaking ability. I mean, right place, right time, seeing the ice, seeing everyone around him. That's exactly what I want to see. And on that goal, man, like, you could see it in spades. His vision is next level. His ability to read the play, next level. Like, those are the types of things that, again, in what has been a disappointing season, when you see those flashes, you do get very, very excited about what his future game will hold. Another guy that you are exceptionally happy for last night is Nikolai Knyazhov, to get his first goal since 2021, which is just, it's unbelievable. Like, I remember being so high on Nikolai Knyazhov after that 2021 campaign, you know, abbreviated 56-game schedule. And then for him to just not have been back until the last couple of weeks is just, it's wild, because he is such a good hockey player. Like, I look at his ability out there on the ice, and he's more of obviously the true defender's defenseman, but, you know, he can impact a game. His positioning is very, very sharp. The way that he, you know, is able to disrupt plays, the way he's able to get on guys, he's physical. I like his game. And this is another thing that, you know, he's 24 years old. I would hope that he does have a bright future with the Sharks in the National Hockey League, because I feel like he has a lot of game left to grow in his game, and he has a lot of, you know, a very high starting point, you know, coming back from 2 years missed, essentially, with that first groin injury and then a torn Achilles. Like, that's the bright spot out of these games. I mean, you can focus on some of the other things, and I know David Quinn talked about this after the game, of the fact that they were going up against Columbus and, you know, just kind of the back-and-forth pond hockey nature of the game, whether that was the Sharks just not wanting to put in the hard effort against the opposition or maybe feeling like they didn't have to. You know, it's interesting because both the Blue Jackets and the Sharks have really high-caliber talents on their roster and have obviously had setbacks over the course of the year, specifically Columbus with a lot of the injuries that they have faced. But both teams have a very high compete level. Both teams have been able to, you know, make life difficult for their opposition, even if they are at the bottom of the standings. But it looked just like the Sharks couldn't get comfortable on defense, couldn't really get comfortable much throughout the entirety of the game in terms of being in a good place and, you know, just having to deal with what Columbus was bringing. They never really looked like they were able to establish as much of the zone control as they wanted, especially on the offensive end. And it was another situation where all night long they were reacting to what Columbus was bringing. And that is, you know, that's not good. You want the other team to be reactionary. And, you know, for the first 6-7 minutes of the game, the Sharks were the better team, and they take the early 1-0 lead. And then once they go up 1-0, a switch was flipped, and they went from being, you know, the more aggressive team to suddenly being on their heels and reactionary and just looking a little bit lost, especially on the defensive end. And suddenly it went from a 1-0 lead to a 3-1 deficit, and they went 20-plus minutes without getting a shot on goal. I want to say that before Logan Couture scored, I think the Sharks had been outshot 28-6. And, you know, those type of extended lapses can't happen for the Sharks if they want to grow and be a better team. I mean, we talk about takeaways and or lessons or whatever you want to apply to this game specifically, but, you know, that's the type of game where it's just like you wonder, when they can play so well against some of the upper echelon teams in the NHL, what exactly happens against Columbus that makes them just fall asleep for more than a period of the game? And I understand there were some penalties, and I understand they had to go on the kill, and, you know, situations were always difficult and different, but you just kind of wonder, like, what is going on? Like, why can they go from looking so good to start off the game to suddenly looking lost and looking disengaged and looking reactionary and on their heels and not able to really get any sort of control over the flow of the game? We've talked all year long about the Sharks and their inability to play a full 60 minutes of hockey, and that's something that we're essentially going to be waiting for next year to see. We have to look at probably a new team that's more capable of playing 60 complete minutes of hockey. And what we saw in this game was, it was most definitely not that. It was great to see the fight. Don't get me wrong. I love the fact that the Sharks are down 3-1. They can get themselves back into it. Like, you always want to see your team capable of fighting and battling and getting their way back into a game. Like, that's, again, that's the point. That's what you want to see. You want that fight. But there is an argument to be made that in your own house against a team like Columbus, you should be able to do more with that 1-0 lead, and you shouldn't just find yourself on the wrong end of a massive momentum swing that has you go from up 1-0 to down 3-1. And then you're chasing the game. Notice the Sharks worked hard to get themselves back into the game. Give them all the credit in the world for that, but they never took the lead. They were never able to capitalize it to the extent where they were ahead. But that's got to be part of the lessons that are learned in this difficult season, where you are talking about the future, where you are talking about Connor Bedard, where you are talking about a reality that is not the here and now. Like, I would hope that some of these younger players are taking the lessons from this game and looking at, yes, that although their compete was good, their defensive mindset wasn't. Like, they had too many defensive breakdowns. They had too many moments where they were making life easy on their opposition. And I guess, you know, if there's one takeaway that everyone should have from this season, other than it being just, you know, frustrating and relatively demoralizing, it's the fact that the Sharks have far too often made life easy for their opponents. And, you know, that's not a good thing in the National Hockey League. This league is so talented that even a team like Columbus, who has had a tough go of it and has definitely been dealing with injuries, you know, they can take advantage of situations. You know, even the Sharks, who are not the most opportunistic or advantageous team, if you give them enough chances, they're going to make you pay for it. And that's the same thing that we saw from Columbus in this game. Like, the Sharks gave them opportunities. The Sharks gave them chances, whether it was on the power play, whether it was on a 2-on-0 breakaway in overtime, that Kapo somehow came up with the save, which was just watching that play go back and forth, by the way, the fact that there weren't Sharks screaming back in the defensive end, like, you could feel the defeat setting in at that point. And maybe, though, Columbus didn't win it on that play, to watch it go that way, it was kind of like, oof, there's not a lot left in the tank. And that's where this team is right now at this point. Like, there's just not a lot left to give. And I get it. I really do. They have been fighting all year long. They've been competitive. They have been dealing with all sorts of things swirling around their team, whether it was the trade rumors all year long ahead of the deadline, whether it's the talk of the future, whether it's the unbelievable number of demoralizing, heartbreaking losses. Like, this is life in the NHL. It is not easy. It is not fun. And when you're not a good team, it can be a lot to handle. And I think that, you know, when you're watching last night's game, when you don't see the defensive effort maybe as good as it should be, and when you see a little bit of a slow response on some plays that look like they're going to end the game, not that I understand it or defend it, but I think it's important to understand where it's coming from. I mean, it's just been snowballing more and more all year long. There's only so much you can watch of it before it starts getting you to the point where there's not a lot left to give, and that's where the Sharks are right now. And I give a lot of credit to Kevin LeBanc last night, who played one of his best games in recent memory. Obviously, he has had a big-time message sent to him, and I think that one of the things you can do in a lost year like this is send that message to Kevin LeBanc. You can try and tell him, like, hey, you have got to fight for this ice time. You've got to prove to us, above all else, that you're going to be out there and play the type of game that we want you to play. And it wasn't just because he scored the goal last night. I thought that all throughout the game, he was making good decisions. He was smart with the puck. He was on the puck. He was doing things to make the game happen as best as he could. And when he did score that goal with a beautiful move to make it happen, you know, that's the kind of thing that everyone remembers. We go back to the 5-minute major versus Vegas, and it was Kevin LeBanc who had a hand in all four of those goals and was showing exactly why everyone thought his future was so bright. And obviously, you got to do more in this league than be on the offensive end. And Kevin LeBanc has needed a little bit more defense into his game and has needed a little bit more just overall, not a conservative nature to his game, but he just needs a little bit more care to his game, I think, in the perspective of David Quinn. And I thought we saw a lot of that last night. And I hope that he grows off of it. And I know that there's been talk of, you know, trading Kevin LeBanc, and that's obviously not going to happen because we're on the other side of the deadline. We'll see what happens in the summer. But I still see a lot in Kevin LeBanc's game that I like. I still see a lot that's there for him to build off of, and I hope that he can turn into the player that, you know, David Quinn wants him to be and needs him to be in his system. Because if that happens, you know, then again, you're seeing growth in a player, and I think that's what everybody wants to see throughout the rest of the year from players that, you know, you need more from. And you can talk about a William Eklund, about how he got that first goal. That is growth for him. We can talk about Nikolai Knyazhov, his first goal since returning to the NHL and, you know, being darn near 2 years removed from the NHL. While that maybe isn't the same type of growth, it's indicative of him getting back to where he needs to be, and he's finding ways to contribute inside David Quinn's system. Pouliot, him coming through with a nice game. I thought that, you know, that's something that, in terms of a newcomer, you like to see. You want to see guys that can fit in to the overall system. So again, while there are not immense positive takeaways from last night, and while the gameplay was weird, you were up and then down and then fighting to get back into it, you can't ever take the lead, your defense wasn't great, there's still positives to take away. And then, of course, let's not forget the fact that Erik Karlsson picked up a point. He has got 84 points on the year, and he is the brightest part of what has been a down year for the San Jose Sharks. I don't think there's any other way you can look at it. Yeah, I mean, you appreciate what you've seen from some of the younger players. You appreciate what you've seen from Logan Couture and his continued fight. And Timo Meier, before he was traded, was having a great year. But, you know, now he's not on the Sharks anymore. I mean, Erik Karlsson has been the star of the show. And when you're in the building, even though there were cries of we want Connor or we want Bedard, Erik Karlsson, you can feel the energy when the puck is on his stick, when he's trying to set up a play, when he's trying to make something happen. And there were a couple times last night where he did put the puck exactly where it needed to be, where maybe if it had been Timo Meier, it would have gone into the back of the net. Or maybe if it had been on another team with more talent around him, he would have even more points. I mean, that's the thing, is like, he is doing this on the team that is battling at the bottom of the standings in the Western Conference, you know, trying to vie for the first overall pick in the upcoming NHL draft. I mean, that is the type of thing that is absolutely wild about this. It's not like he's doing it on a star-studded team or he's got, you know, all these amazing players around him. And not that the Sharks lack talent. They do have some good players, clearly. But it's not a playoff contending team. I mean, we look at what Connor McDavid is doing this year. You look at the talent that's around him. Not that shocking that when you put Connor McDavid around that much talent that you're going to end up with high-level results. With Erik Karlsson, it's a little bit of a different scenario, and it makes it all the more impressive to watch him have the season that he has been having. All right, we are going to take a break. On the other side, we're going to get into some post-game sound and talk with Aaron Portsline of The Athletic. You're on Morning Tide on the Sharks Audio Network.
That to-do list you have needs one more thing. Chill. It's an easy thing to do. Just crack open an ice-cold Coors Light and chill. Take the afternoon off and binge-watch anything. Go to happy hour and stay for a couple hours. Who's counting anyways? Or hang out with just your dog because you've had enough human interaction this week. Whatever you do, do it with a Coors Light. Mountain Cold Refreshment made to chill. 2020 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Celebrate responsibly.
Welcome back to Morning Tide, brought to you by Coors Light.
That's it for the power play. Absolutely nothing on this power play for the Sharks. They're 1-for-2 tonight. Benning leads it on the right. LeBanc gets by the defense. He's walking in. He shoots and he scores. What a big goal for Kevin LeBanc to make it a one-goal contest with 5:53 gone by in the third. And LeBanc jumps up into the glass. He loves what just happened. He put it in the net and the Sharks are back in.
I thought they played well. I thought Kevin had one of his better games in a while, not just because he scored. I just thought he was around the puck more. He was over the puck more. He earned the ice time that he got, and he and I have had plenty of conversations about that. And we actually talked before the mini game, had a good conversation, and he's played well the last two games, so he's going to get more ice time. It's very simple. Those who play well will be rewarded with further play.
That is head coach David Quinn after last night's overtime loss to Columbus, talking about Kevin LeBanc. And yeah, Kevin LeBanc had a solid game and had a goal that reminds you of all the talent that he has. And really that, you know, you see that type of praise from Quinn. That's come after a long time where Kevin LeBanc has spent a lot of time on the bench. In the last two games, he's looked that much better. So hopefully that message is being sent and Kevin LeBanc is going to do what is necessary to be a bigger part of the Sharks' future going forward. At least that would be my hope. Quinn also weighed in on his overall take of the game.
Yeah, just a very different game than Saturday. I thought it was very loose. I thought it had a pond hockey feel to it from our end of it. You're not going to win hockey games and give up six goals and be that loose and give up the chances we gave up. And like I said, it was a 180 from the other night. I thought we were tight the other night. I thought we defended hard. I thought we managed the puck. But tonight it was all offense at all cost and not a lot of defensive conscience. So, you know, that's something that we're going to make sure that doesn't creep into our game under these circumstances.
And he also weighed in on the stretch where they went 20-plus minutes without a shot on goal.
Well, like I said, they had the puck a lot because we weren't doing enough to, you know, defend them and cause turnovers and take it away from them. We made it very easy on them. So too often tonight it was an easy game for them. I thought we rebounded on a few occasions, had some stretches where I thought we had, you know, snarled to our game and took away time and space on them, but it was wasn't enough.
And Logan Couture gave his take on what he thought was happening.
Okay, yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, obviously they controlled a lot of the play after the first 7 minutes of the game. And, obviously they scored some goals where we didn't defend very well. We had breakdowns off of rushes and in-zone breakdowns, and I thought our goaltender played well. But just too many chances. We just gave up too many. I mean, they don't defend extremely hard, obviously, either, but you know, whoever defended harder was going to win tonight, and obviously they get the break in overtime there, and Kapa makes a great save, but would have liked to battle that one out for a goal.
And that's the thing you hear them both talking about, is that Columbus was controlling the play, and they were. I mean, that's when you hear me talk about the team being reactionary, which is what I never want to see from the Sharks, but it's that the other team is dictating what's happening out there on the ice. The other team is telling the Sharks what to do in response, essentially. And that's not what I like to see. I like to see the Sharks being the one dictating the terms of the game. And the team that dictates how the game is being played oftentimes is the team that comes out on top. Now, last night's game, it was loose. It was wide open. It was end-to-end. You heard David Quinn use the pond hockey reference, which wasn't by accident. I mean, there was just not a lot of discipline from either team throughout the course of the game. But Columbus was still, you know, making things happen more consistently, and that's why they went from a 1-0 deficit to a 3-1 lead. And yes, the Sharks did fight their way back into the game and send it to overtime, but still, it was Columbus's game throughout the entirety. Logan weighed in on what exactly the lessons are they've got to take away from it.
I think defending harder. You win in this league by defending hard, and you create offense by defending hard, and you know, at the end of the year, when you're maybe out of a playoff race, it's easy to forget about defending. But that creates good habits. Is when you play hard, you play above your man. And I think we've got to get back to that. I don't think we defended very well tonight.
And Nikolai Knyazhov, which, by the way, let's revisit that goal of his.
Now it's work free. Couture with 2 points, sends to the slot. Knyazhov shoots, score! Nikolai Knyazhov, his first of the season, ties it up, and Logan Couture sets him up to make it all even. 5-5 here at the Shark Tank.
It was a fun moment because you just appreciate everything that Knyazhov has been through to get back to this moment. So I liked that. That was my favorite moment of the night, actually, even more than William Eklund. Listen, Eklund is a huge part of the future, but he has not been out of the league for 2 years. He has been on the prospect train, turning himself into a future player. Knyazhov was there. He's had to fight his way back again from career-threatening injuries.
It's really nice, Shane. Thanks for saying that. Man, all my emotions there, just, you know, it sucks that we lost. That's all I can think about right now. All I have through my head is going is just all those moments where, you know, I could have played better, I could have, you know, done something defensively. Even though scoring that goal, like, I didn't think I played a great game, but you know, we all have to, you know, work harder and get a win off of this game, definitely.
And you love to hear him expressing that mentality because, yes, it's a big moment for him, but he's more concerned with the win above all else. I wanted to give you a taste of this interview that I did with Aaron Portsline of The Athletic, and I asked him if he was at all tired of the Connor Bedard story in terms of the fight for the first overall pick.
Well, no, and it's a good thing I'm not, because I think it's going to be with us for a while. I think if San Jose wins tonight, it's not quite sealed off yet, but it would sure start to look like it's going to be Columbus or Chicago fighting at the bottom. That would open up a 5-point gap, which is a pretty good gap this time of year. Columbus wins, and it'll be neck and neck to the finish line. Hey, that's what this season's been about in Columbus here for I don't know, 3 months, 4 months now. Mm-hmm. The only thing I feel slightly bad about is if I'm Adam Fantilli, I'm thinking, man, any other year, I'm the big deal here. And I think someone who doesn't win the lottery but may pick second is going to be devastated when they probably shouldn't be, because they're going to get a hell of a player too.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge part of this is that, I mean, even beyond him, there's also several good players in the draft. And, you know, I think what's interesting about this and watching the way that this tanking conversation, which I'm not a fan of, I understand if you're the worst team, you know, it's not like it guarantees either way, but in your opinion, has Bedard made it specifically intense this year? Like, I feel like this discussion, even more so than when there was Eichel and McDavid, maybe it's just because there's one player that's seen as generational, but I feel like this year it has been particularly intense.
Well, I think it's intense to get that pick. I think it's intense among management groups, but I have to say, I don't think I know what tanking means, and I think it's an interesting topic because management may want the number one pick, but if you talk to the guys in the room and if you watch how the Blue Jackets have played, I'll just speak to them specifically because I cover them. They haven't stopped playing in games. They still play their rear ends off and have gone on some stretches where you're like, guys, what are you doing? this is not the point now, but the players don't seem to get that. I mean, San Jose's been cool here for a little while. Look what Arizona's done.
Yeah.
They're not tanking. Anaheim has had a little uptick here. Chicago has been a couple of 2 week stretches where they've been 500. They've won some games you wouldn't expect them to win. I guess I haven't watched these teams play and said, God, they're not even trying. And I got that feeling with Edmonton, Buffalo, that those two teams were just really demoralized and had stopped competing. And I don't see that here. I see some teams, certainly at the bottom of the standings, not good teams, but not teams just mailing it in.
No, I will agree with you in that capacity. And that's what's made it, you know, so frustrating when you watch some of these teams like the Sharks or Columbus, because you do see the effort out there. And the Sharks obviously have not been winning a lot lately, but usually a pretty spirited effort. But the fan intensity, I mean, from Sharks fans just saying, you know, literally posting on social media, I hope they lose tonight. I'm just thinking, or then, you know, fans of other franchises, I guess that's the aspect that I've never seen quite so intense, where fans are hoping for it. Like, that to me is just really unique. And I guess, you know, now even compared to when McDavid and Eichel did come up, social media has that much more of a presence, so we hear about it that much more.
And I think a few years ago, it was still seen as like an unspeakable thing. Maybe it happens, but you just don't talk about it. Look, the Penguins did it for Mario Lemieux. The Penguins kind of have figured it out for two generations now and had superstar players. So it's not a new thing, but I also think it's an easier point to reach. And I think that transcends sports. I don't think it's just hockey. I think you're seeing that in I think what happened in football. I think Houston had the number one pick and then somehow won the last game of the season, and Chicago jumped over them. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing, and their fan base was just devastated. And what I think is weird too, though, is in the building, those people want wins.
Right.
And on social media, those people are all about the tank. So I don't know. I'm not sure what that says, but it seems to be drawn pretty. When you're in that building, I don't get the sense. I've not heard any, we want Connor chants. I don't hear any Bronx cheers when they lose. They want them to win in the building. They want them to lose on social media, for what that's worth.
Yeah, no, it's very similar to how it is out here. And then just, you know, the other part of this is that these are all prospects and you never know. I mean, I can go bring you names from every sport, all the major sports in North America, and tell you this player, you know, this guy was supposed to change everything and didn't. And while it does seem like there is more of a proving ground in hockey that allows us to extrapolate success at one level from another, it's still not a guarantee. And then even if the guy is great, I mean, let's say there is a devastating injury that derails things even more. I mean, it's not like you get this and then you're guaranteed to have a Stanley Cup in 3 years. Let's go talk to some Oilers fans about that, right?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And I think if there's so much that goes into this, like, you have to have the infrastructure around that player to raise that player the right way too. You think back to when Crosby came into the league, and it was Lemieux last year. Mark Recchi was here. Sergei Gonchar, some really respected veteran players. Look who went when, you know, Stamkos came in. Some of the veterans down in Tampa that were there with him. Lecavalier, St. Louis, just really proven guys. And you got to have that in place. It's not just that player by themselves. But you got to do some team building, which is a tricky thing too. It's the chemistry still has to be right to get you up and over the hump. One player, especially in hockey, it doesn't just elevate. The other thing is, though, is you can go about it the hard way, and Columbus has tried to go about it that way for years and years and years. And you look at the teams that are the dominating Stanley Cup winning teams. It's how Colorado got MacKinnon. Mm-hmm. It's how Pittsburgh got Crosby. It's how Tampa Bay got Stamkos. You can go up and down the list. This is a very successful way to build a very good team, is to win the lottery the right year.
Again, that is Aaron Portsline of The Athletic joining us here on the Sharks Audio Network. If you want to hear the full interview, check out the build-up game 68 versus Columbus. We are out of time. I'll be back with you on Thursday as we get ready for that game against the Kraken. So be sure to join us right here on the Sharks Audio Network. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
You've been listening to the San Jose Sharks Morning Tide, brought to you by Coors Light on the Sharks Audio Network.